Logic. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. This is The Sweet Spot. Joining me, as always, Alex Remezowski, fresh off of a Tiger Jam appearance out in Las Vegas. How's it going, Alex?
It's going pretty good. Sad to be back, but it was a pretty crazy week, and I didn't expect any less. It was pretty unbelievable. I mean, Tiger Woods, he's an intimidating guy, to say the least, and being up close and personal with him is very strange.
Yeah, so a nice pic on Twitter of you and the Tiger. But did you get to shake hands with him?
I gave him a fist bump and told him fist to bump. Win us a major. Yep.
Nice. I imagine he's got a pretty good grip on a handshake.
I could only imagine. Yeah, it was pretty cool. We the first day you show up, and it was a great breakfast, awesome course, like just everybody is obviously just in a great mood because you're at Tiger Jam and you're playing golf and you're surrounded by some awesome people. You show up and before you know it, you got I can't remember his name. Instagram is hole-in-one trick shots, I believe. He was kind of like the opener, which was actually pretty cool. He seems like a very cool guy. Mm-hmm. And then so he did his little thing. And then before you know it, Tiger's out there doing his little showcase for everybody, Q&A. Got to ask whatever you want. I had a couple questions in mind, and both were kind of thrown out there before I got a chance. I was going to ask him about his stinger. What's the key to your stinger, Tiger? That was in my head. Someone asked. He answered. It was cool. Got to see the stinger a few times on the range.
Nice.
And honestly, just like seeing him hit balls up that close, like I was like right there. It was very cool. And then I was content with just that. And then there were a few more run-ins throughout the weekend that, you know, just went above and beyond. And the picture came shortly after that. Walking back to my cart, realized Tiger's literally right behind me walking. I turn around. I'm like, hey, can I get a picture, Tiger? And he's like, yeah, sure. Take a quick picture. And then I gave him a fist bump and said, win a major for us, Tiger. Yep. You got it. You're back.
Nice. I'll be playing him next time he's out.
I think I might have to also.
Yeah, you pretty much have to. For those of you who aren't aware, Alex took down the Tiger Jam contest on DraftKings Masters Week and won himself a nice little package out there to the Tiger Jam golf convention kind of deal. So very cool. That's you're having quite the year there, Alex. You got the Tiger Jam. You were king of the course for quite a while. Let's see if we can get it rolling again.
Yeah, I have a few goals. I want to get back in that bad boy. And, you know, you just got to keep your eye out for that stuff because quite like, honestly, that was like one of the cool experiences of my entire life. I met so many awesome people, some bigger names in DFS, some golf pros. Reggie Bush was there, like talked to him for a little while, like. Very, very cool experience. And these things aren't all that uncommon on DFS sites. I know FanDuel does some, DraftKings mm-hmm. does some. They do these different trips and people meet each other and it's pretty cool. Like some of these guys have been to multiple of them, seemingly every few months you're going on another trip through DraftKings. And it's like, it's right there at your fingertips. You just gotta look out for it.
It could be you.
It could be you. New York State Lottery.
Right. Let's do a quick wrap up of last week. interesting week. You know, Aaron Wise was not chalk at all, but outside of him and a couple other names, it was a heavy chalk week, which was not good for me because I was hoping the opposite was going to happen. Took some gambles on lower owned players, so was not a great week for myself personally.
Yeah, you know, similar. I was in a very similar situation. It seemed like it was the type of week where if you had six of six through, that you were going to be just fine. But somehow, with those names that really came in, like the top 20, 25 or so, like I'm going through the list. I'm like, Brandon Grace, T3, Kevin Na, T6, Jimmy Walker, T6, Kevin Tway, T9. Matt Jones, I threw his name out there, and then Spieth 21st. Like, all guys I had in my lineups, just nothing really came together for me. And then Mark Leishman I had a little bit of, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, Leishman I kind of got scared off of a little bit from a chalk perspective. Faded Kevin Na, Adam Scott fully. I put this out on Twitter, and it applies to both of those guys. Like, I'm not looking at it as a loss that I faded them and they did well. I'm just looking at it like a brand new crop has been cultivated of people to buy into their their game and get disappointed, hopefully, in the very near future.
Oh, yeah, big time. I saw the Kevin Na comment. I was, I mean, if you roster him and he finishes in the top 20, you should be, like, just ecstatic because he – first of all, finished top 20, and second of all, didn't withdraw or some craziness, just missed the cut by a horrendous amount. You're dodging bullets. You're dodging bullets every time he makes the cut. Yeah.
And hey, I've got no problem playing either of those guys because with DFS, it's, you know, you have to have a short memory. You can't take past losses personally. You can't, you know, say this guy is inconsistent, I'm never going to play him, because in the instance like this where Kevin Na did well, you could really profit from it. For me, it's when those guys are chalky, when there's a chalky Adam Scott, a chalky Kevin Na, this week, maybe a chalky Webb Simpson. They're guys that let people down time and time again, and you don't want to be in that situation when it's chalk. There's just not enough to be gained, in my opinion. But
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to hear what you have to say about some ownership possibly later on today, because I don't know, Adam Scott could be right back in that situation, and I still haven't played him, and I'm not so sure I plan to start playing him.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the tournament this past weekend. I don't know. I know we were talking about that the PGA might have watered the course a little more than they should have, you know. The wind wasn't what it should have been or could have been to protect the course either. And I just feel like you see the scores they put up. That's not a Lynx course. I think that there was probably a little bit of water spread around the course that normally isn't. I didn't notice too much brown. A Texas golf course should have a little more brown on it.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see much of it, but you just look at these scores, like, minus 23 for Aaron Wise, right, of a 65, 63, 68, 65. I mean, he's very deserving of a win in that situation, but those are a lot of low scores for a course that I think could be considered a difficult one. I'd say crank it. Well, I don't understand why you would ever just water the course so people play better. Right.
Because people still cried. There were still people complaining. Nothing extreme, but like there were still golfers who didn't do well. They were unhappy with the layout, and you know, I don't think they should have. Yeah, they shouldn't have watered it at all. They should have let it play very fast. You know, the winning score should have been like a minus eight, you know, not a minus 20 something.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the Matt Kuchar situation is actually pretty interesting because it's like, first of all, he missed the cut, which is strange, but then
he and Sergio both killed me.
Yeah. And then I was on Brant Snedeker again, obviously. Yeah. And he shot a 67 in the first round. And then 72. Yeah. They were actually, let me see, right in front of me. I got one, two, three, pretty much four people. Brant Snedeker, Bill Haas, Matt Kuchar, No, he went backwards. He shot 72 the first day. But Brant Snedeker, Bill Haas, Graham McDowell, and then Kelly Kraft was someone I think I probably had in one or two lineups. All went low Thursday. I don't know what the conditions were like on Friday. I didn't watch it all on Friday. But
it got windier as the day went on. So guys had teed off. It felt like the guys that were able to get a good score later in the day on Thursday and then tee off in the morning Friday were at a pretty big advantage.
Right. Conditions okay. Were good. Yeah. Bill Haas being one of those. A couple of the guys that played with the Tiger Jam, we did have the DraftKings qualifying group there. So it's probably some names you see floating around towards the top of some of those competitions on a weekly basis.
Right.
We were talking about the cut sweats pretty much the whole round on Friday, and it was actually pretty insane that it was right towards the end. I think there were two birdies in a row that made it go from -3 to -4, and I think that probably hurt quite a few people because that was we were in a T55 situation. So we were going from T69, T70, T69, and then bam, T55 at -4. So yeah, it was an interesting Friday from that perspective for me.
Yep. But all right, let's move on to this week. We're still down in Texas. Still going to be hot. Doesn't look like there's much wind this week and not really any rain to speak of, at least as of yet. So we got the Fort Worth Invitational at Colonial Country Club. This tournament has changed names a whole bunch of times lately. But same course. It's one of the oldest PGA events on the same course going. So tell us a little bit about what we're going to see this weekend.
Yeah, so like you said, it is now the Fort Worth Invitational, formerly, most recently known as the Dean and DeLuca Invitational. Still an invitational, so you have a somewhat limited field. It's going to be between 120 and 132. I think we have, let me check to see what the final tally I have in front of me, 123 players in the field. So it's a little smaller than usual. You still get the top 70 in ties for a cut, which means more guys as a percentage of the total field are going to make the cut as compared to a normal week like last week. Colonial Country Club, like you said, been on tour since the second longest in tour. Second longest running event being played at a single golf course on tour behind Augusta National, the Masters, founded in 1946. It is a par 70, just over 7,200 yards. So nothing crazy long, but it is a par 70. So we got some extra par fours thrown in there. And the par fours aren't necessarily short for that reason. If we're still talking 7,200 yards, you got to look at it. You can look at the card. You got, there's actually a par three that's 247 yards. Your par threes are all 190 plus, and then your par fours are going to be on average in the high fours, but the mid to high fours, and then you got some low fours. But I'm going to be focusing on par four scoring. There's only two par fives, not a ton of water on the golf course. I think we're looking at one of those courses where the debate is going to be, is it an accuracy fairways gained type course, or can someone who likes to hit the ball a long way benefit? And I think something that a lot of people will be thinking about is John Rahm last year, who had quite a bit of luck here. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, John Rahm is a bomber. I was going through some recent performances here actually, and it was pretty interesting to me because I think the general idea is that an approach player slash a putting player, kind of like what we talked about for the first seemingly three quarters of what's happened this season, is just, you're looking at approach and you're looking at putting, you're looking at someone who can put the ball in the right part of the green to make the putt. And I think that's true of every week. But this week, I think it can actually go either way, kind of. You got guys like Webb Simpson, who we know is the accuracy, kind of a short knocker type guy. Matt Kuchar, I always put them right there in the same group. Both have had a lot of luck here. But then you go look at a John Rahm, Harris English is a longer hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Spieth is not by any means a short hitter.
No.
You got some other guys who hit the long ball that can really have a lot of success here. But then, you know, you do see a Steve Stricker in there who finished T7th last year.
Right.
So I think it can be debated here, but there's a lot of trees. There's not a lot of water. There's trouble to get in, but if you are missing greens and you're able to get up and down and gain strokes around the green, I think you're going to have success too, but you're really going to have to maybe take a side, maybe mix and match. It's really, it's a tough little thing to figure out. I don't think you can really narrow this course down to long or short hitters.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. It's John Rahm last year showed there is a way to attack it differently than, you know, trying to hit long irons into the greens. But the thing about Rahm is when he's on, he's a very good putter. And I don't recall if it was the case specifically last year, but, you know, if he gets himself in trouble with a drive and doesn't leave himself the easiest up and down, his putting can get it done for him. And that's something that a lot of long hitters typically struggle with.
Yeah, I think putting is actually going to be huge at this course. Actually looking at just a simple chart of 12 rounds at Colonial, strokes gained putting, and let me see how many. So Rahm's only got the 4 rounds in there, and he's gained, in comparison to the field, see, this is skewed because he's only got 4 rounds there, but he's 34th in the field, which mm-hmm. puts him ahead of, I mean, like a 80% of the field, almost like 70% of the field, and he's only got the 4 rounds. So he was definitely gaining strokes putting last year.
Right. Yeah, any tournament you do well in, you're gaining strokes putting.
Yeah, that is very true. I guess I'll just finish off. There's Bentgrass greens. Cut's been anywhere from +4 to even over the past 5 years. I think with the wind and weather, like you mentioned, which at this point in time looks pretty moderate, I would expect, and judging off of where cuts have fallen recently, I wouldn't be surprised if you see an even par cut this year, something a little closer to even. Who knows? Like, we haven't gone under par in the past 5 years, but judging by the recent past, you know, golf is progressing, players are progressing. I wouldn't doubt it. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. And that's pretty much all. I based a lot of my research on 4 main stats, and those are putting on bent grass, strokes gained approach, strokes gained par 4, and then strokes gained ball striking, which is kind of inclusive of all tee to green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, approach is very critical here, looks like.
Yeah. So I kind of left that off the tee stat out of it, because I think it's kind of it could go either way, and I don't want to focus on one or the other.
Right, don't want to muddy the waters. So let's start off at the top with Jordan Spieth. You know, he was the chalk of the chalk last week. Most people are saying, you know, he was a bit of a letdown. He's still tied for 21st. Like, it's not a crash and burn. It's not what you paid for, but I feel like with everything that's happened with him outside of the Masters, people are just looking for a reason not to play Jordan Spieth. I mean, he's still going to be one of the most popular guys, but at the most expensive spot, with a little bit of a bad taste in people's mouth, he might be only in like the mid-teens.
Yeah, you know, I think it's actually interesting last week that, like, you look at his score, he went 69, 66, 71, 67. So the run that stands out is obviously Saturday, 71. You improve that by five strokes. Say he shot another 66 on Saturday. Like, he's still only 16 under. Aaron Wise won at 23 under.
Right.
So I don't know if that's saying he's got some ground to make up, but he did finish T21. I think if anything, it might just show how well Aaron Wise actually played.
Right.
But I agree. I'm like, I feel like a lot of my feelings are always very similar to the feelings of the general DFS community, and I'm getting super sour on Jordan Spieth. 11-7 is a lot, but you look at that course history and it's insane. Yeah. So it's like, it's a little bit of here and a little bit of there.
Yeah, I mean, the course history is really nice. I feel like with Spieth, he suffers from not being Tiger syndrome. Like, people want him to be Tiger. They want him to go out and just win every tournament like Tiger did. Like, he was the next golfer promised, and he's not doing what you want him to do. But finishing, you know, top 20 consecutively or consistently in the PGA is – that's nothing to bat an eye at. It's really difficult to do, and he's got plenty of big wins on his resume. So, you know, it's
so true. He finishes T41 at the Players with a quad on the last hole, and it's right. Like he still made money that week, and that is still what so many of these players would be loving to do. You even look at someone like a Ricky Fowler or a Justin Rose. Like, I think people are. I think you're very right about the Tiger comment. Like, all of these guys, you hear trash being talked about Spieth, about Rahm now, about Rose. Not Rose. No one's talking trash on Rose, but he has not been like getting the consistent top tens again or whatever. And then Ricky, especially like Dustin Johnson, even earlier this year with like literally one bad round. Like, there's no dominant player here, so I think it makes it easier to talk smack about any of these guys.
Right. So yeah, I'm totally cool with people playing Spieth if that's what suits them. I think the ownership is at a good spot. You know, he's we say it every week he plays. He's like the best all around golfer on tour. He's got the most complete skill set when his putting isn't giving him issues. That did give him some trouble this weekend. So, you know, on a course with small greens where you need the putter for sure. There's a little bit of a risk there, but that can happen to any golfer any week, that the putter can just go cold. You know, I think you're good with Spieth. I'm good with Spieth.
Yeah, I agree. And we're back to bentgrass greens, if that means anything to anyone. But he does stat out very well on bentgrass greens. But if you're looking anywhere near long term, he's kind of always up there in putting, and it's just like the very recent past that he hasn't quite been himself. So I think that's all there is to say, really. Play him if you are comfortable with the other five guys in your lineup.
Okay. So out of those next three in the 10K plus tier, you got Rahm. We talked about him briefly. I mean, I could see him carving the golf course up again with an aggressive approach, but it's risky. You know, what's your feel on Rahm?
I went through a strong Rahm phase this year, but at 11,000 and thinking about what he has kind of been doing lately, I think part of his game that has been struggling is that approach and iron game. And I think that's going to be huge here because John Rahm's always got the driver. He's always got the tee shot, but we're going back and forth on that. We don't know. Like, yes, he can smash his driver and have like anywhere from 20 yards to 120 yards in. But if he's not consistently putting that to like birdie range, then it's going to be questionable. Like, I think he could, just like Jordan Spieth, be very much in this. But at 11,000, I would much rather like pretty much play the next six guys in line. I think you're going to be able to save a ton of money by jumping down to some studs at this point who are significantly cheaper than him.
Yep. And the one thing I will say about Rahm is he actually stats out really well on hard to hit fairways, which, you know, for a guy who's a big hitter, that's kind of surprising. Like, you worry about the accuracy as the driving distance increases. So wouldn't shock me if he's top five again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think we brought that up the last time he played after he won in Spain and then came back for the Players. I think we were talking about that. And I don't think he had a terrible showing in the Players. Yeah, he had one bad round in the Players. So John Rahm is always going to be in it, but 11,000 is a lot, and 11,700 is a lot for Spieth. And I think you can easily work around him if you want to work around him.
All right, so then you got Rose and Ricky Fowler. Justin Rose playing here for the first time. It worries me a pretty good amount, especially for the third most expensive golfer. I heard he was playing here because you have to play every so many years to maintain your PGA status and et cetera. So I'm not sure how motivated Rosie's going to be this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that actually, with the stats I'm looking at, he's obviously been ball striking. Like, that's Justin Rose for you. Mm-hmm. And he's had, if we're looking back to like a full year, the guy doesn't really slip up very often at all, basically no matter where he's playing. He's kind of like a Jason Day to me at this point, where if he's playing, he's always pretty enticing, but it's like, oh, like, when was the last time he played and what did he do? But then you look at Jason Day and it's like top 10, top 5 every single time. Mm-hmm. Justin Rose has been a little, I guess his finishes haven't been quite there, but his last two tournaments with the Players and the Masters, 23rd and 12th, like, and then Houston, 52nd. I guess you might want to think about that, but it's tough. 10-6 is nice, though.
Yeah, I feel like he's just a fine cash game play. He's not going to hurt you. Houston was right before the Masters. A lot of guys checked out of that tournament on Friday.
Yeah, good point.
So, yeah, I feel like he's top 20, almost guaranteed, but I just don't know if he's going to know the ins and the outs of a course that you need to have experience on to win it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess my final point with Justin Rose will be 13 starts this year. He's made 13 cuts, 8 top 10s, and 2 wins. And then he's priced 1,100 below Jordan Spieth, who hasn't won since the U.S. Open of last year, the British Open of last year.
Right.
So,
yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all if he took it down.
But then you got Jordan Spieth with the ridiculous course history of 2-1-2. So there you go.
All right, and then I know you always play Ricky. he hasn't played here in a couple of years. And before the 2014 was the last time he played. He was cut. So I don't know about Ricky this week. You got any love for Mr. Fowler?
Do you have any type of ownership projection on Ricky? Because I think the last I heard that was that people would maybe be a little bit interested in him, and I'm leaning the direction you are. Like, honestly, I'm thinking, I think Jordan Spieth, I think Ricky Fowler, I think two guys I want to play every single week, and all I can picture is them both missing 2 and 3 footers the past 2 weeks,
right,
3 weeks, whatever it is. And we're talking about how important putting is. And they're both just, they're not having great finishes, and they're not putting, and they're not themselves. So why play them now at these prices?
I think his ownership is probably about where it's been, approaching 20%. You got the Ricky contingent that's going to play him every week despite struggles.
Like me.
Right. the price is about where it's been. There's not a lot pointing to Ricky this week, so it's probably a little below where you usually get it, which can be a good thing. But like you said, I don't see a big reason to play Ricky Fowler this week. It just hasn't been his year. I know he was playing with the swing a little bit early on, I don't know if that's still happening, if he's pressing to try and get to that next level, you know, up there with Spieth. So,
yeah, you know, I'd like to look into Ricky a little more and just like see what exactly is going on with him. But if we're talking the four stats I'm looking at, he is, I mean, he's 16th putting on bent grass. This is over a medium time frame, 16th on bent grass, 14th ball striking, 6th par 4, and 13th stroke scan approach. So firmly within the top 15 or 16 on those four stats. You can never look away from him. Like, again, it's just another reason for me to try to match ownership with him. Yeah. Like, if we think he's going to be 15%,
and
then 15% of your lineups. And
you know the week he wins is going to be the week that you just didn't expect him to do anything at all. So,
yeah, Ricky's not going to win in a chalky week. He's going to win in, like, the Masters when people were starting to get sour on him is when he finished in second and made a very solid run at it. So, I'm going to play him because I always play him. I think if I had to choose, all right, I'll throw this at you like I always do. We got Webb Simpson next. He's coming off of his big win at the Players, and he's had very good course history. He's gained a ton of strokes here in 17 and 16, came in fifth and tied in third. He's been on a great run, which is just crazy that I'm not a rich man right now because I didn't actually bet him. Mm-hmm. I just put him in a few lineups here and there. But he's 10-2. We got him at 10-2, and then everyone else above is Fowler, Rose, Rahm, Spieth. Choose two.
I think Spieth for sure. I don't know. I don't know who else I would pick.
Yeah, you know, I'm so like in this price range, I like to just be like a little contrarian and go with guys that I trust week to week, regardless. Like, these are the guys that I was thinking about this earlier as I was going through this whole field. When we're talking up top, I think about type of player and maybe course fit. With players down low, I then revert to recent play. And I think that is a very sound strategy because some of these other guys, you get hot, you're going to have to get hot and you're going to have to stay hot to eventually make your way up in the price range. That's like, this is why they're up there. So with that in mind, I think my two guys would be Justin Rose and Ricky Fowler.
I'll say this about Ricky. He hasn't made the most birdies or eagles this year, but he's avoided bogeys really well. And on this course, there's not a lot of scoring to be found. You just can't make mistakes. Ricky's actually second in 2018 in bogey avoidance. So, you know, on a course where there's only one hole that you got any possibility of eagling, that's the first par five. Josh Culp of Roto World put out on this, in the history of this course, there's like 140 eagles ever. And out of those, like 60 of them are hole outs from off the green. So it's just an insanely low number of eagles, and birdies, you know, are also hard to find. So avoiding mistakes is big this week.
Yeah, I like that. I actually included in our model, I did include birdie or better percentage, but on a second thought, maybe bogey avoidance is really what you want to look at there. I think bogey avoidance is probably highly correlated with strokes gained around the green because you're kind of avoiding bogeys as you're missing fairways or missing greens or missing both.
Right.
You can get up and down and get a par. That's the key to golf as a person like me or you. And I think it's what sets these guys apart when they're not getting
birdies. That's what Hank Haney says. No two chips, no three putts, and you'll be amazed what happens with your score.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I used to say no doubles and hey, you're gonna break 90. Yep.
All right, so then we got the newest Players champion, Webb Simpson, making an appearance in the 10K tier. it's going to be a fairly chalky week for Webb coming off of that performance and coming into a course where all of his skills should be showcased. But as we alluded to earlier, Webb has a way of letting you down in the moments where you expect him to do the best.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. He scares the shit out of me this week. I am like, you know me, and you know how he's one of those guys that I just want to play, and I want to play, and I want to play. But my first thought was like, not a chance, quite honestly. And if I hear his ownership is going anywhere above like 13%, I'm not going
to
play him.
Yeah, I'd expect it to be slightly above 15, depending on, you know, some more factors as the week goes on, getting that to a better number. But I would think north of 15.
Like, you could consider that a cash game play.
For
I
sure,
guess,
cash
but...
game play. Here's the one thing pushing me to play Webb. Everything I was looking at last week had me really wanting to play him. Especially, he's really good in hot weather, and it's not quite as hot this week in Texas, but it's still low 90s. It helps that there's some shade on the course and some water, but he's a great hot weather golfer. So,
yeah, when you say there's no wind, like, let me tell you, I was just in Vegas playing golf, and I was out there just like trying to make myself drink water. I was like, good God, this is crazy. I'm in a cart, like playing the most relaxed round of golf you could ever imagine. Yeah. Like it's a thing. It is definitely a thing.
So. Yeah, but yeah, definitely a risk with Webb these days. But since I got the list open, he's number four on bogey avoidance, right behind Ricky going this week, and one ahead of Jordan Spieth. So he might be an okay chalk play for the fact that that $10,000 price tag should keep him just a little bit below. Like, if he's 9,500, he's 20-some percent owned, like 22, 23% owned. But at 10-2,
yeah, a 10-2 Webb is like a tough yeah, pill to swallow there. But last thing I'll say about him is he's statting out very yep, well, as he always yep, does. But looking at those four main stats I'm looking at, he is fifth on bent grass, 11th strokes gained approach, 27th par four, 34th ball striking. So like, and we said the putting is mm-hmm, huge. He's top five. So top five in his last 24 rounds putting on bent grass, which is a very big thing in a week like yeah, this.
And then right behind him, you got Aaron Wise coming off of his win last week at 9,600. I don't think many people are playing him, probably for good reason. He tends to do better when he can use the driver.
You know, that's actually something I don't know about him. Is he's a driver guy?
I don't think he's got huge distance, but from what I was hearing, it's...
He's a pretty small dude. He looks like he's like 15.
Yeah, he does. His DK picture is like his first license.
Yeah. You're just looking at all of his stuff. I've been like looking at his Instagram when he got the win. He probably got like a million new followers and dollars. But he looks like a yep, young dude, little guy.
But yeah, that was kind of the book I got on him, was that's where he can take advantage a little more. Not that he's the biggest hitter, but there's a small part of me that's like, why not play him this week since his ownership is going to be low, and, you know, maybe he's just on a crazy hot streak.
I mean, if he's going to be that low owned, he's coming off of a T2 win. That's nothing to shake a stick at there. He hasn't shot a round lower than 70 in his past two tournaments.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see, as like I said, as the week goes on, these ownership numbers get a little bit more clear, but not a lot of love for Aaron Wise at the moment, despite that win.
Maybe a GPP play. I don't hate it.
All right, then next guy in the tier, Jimmy Walker. guy I really like. He's kind of in the same boat, on a really good stretch, crushes Texas golf. Seems like he's got the Lyme's disease figured out, and is playing four rounds and four rounds well, and not a big price tag for a good performance last week. Everybody else kind of got a bump that did well.
Since the Masters, he's had four top 20s, and the most recent three have been top six. I think that's all we need to say. And I think if he gets another top 20 in a row here, if he goes five top 20s in a row, we have to promise to never mention Lyme disease ever again.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, accurate golfer, really good approach shots, good in the heat, good in Texas. At 9,500, like, start your cash lineup with Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Like, I'm looking, his putting on Bankgrass isn't anything great, and his, strangely enough, his ball striking isn't that great over the last 24 rounds, which is really, honestly, kind of surprising to me, considering his last 24 rounds, that's six tournaments, and that's 6th, 2nd, 4th, 20th, 73rd, which means his approach, his par 4 scoring, and I guess hitting fairways is probably, and gaining strokes around the green, it has to be, because maybe these tournaments aren't necessarily on bent grass. So he's been putting really well, but we just haven't seen bent grass in a while, and I think that's pretty much what you're working with. If he hits a good approach, he's making the putt for a birdie, and if he doesn't, he's getting up and down for par. And it seems to be what we're focusing on this week. So I'm all good with Jimmy Walker.
Then you got the Cooch, Matt Kuchar, 9,300. I'm not too worried about him coming off the missed cut. He tends to bounce back pretty well. And accuracy is his game, and that's what's on display, accuracy and putting this week. So I think you're going to get a nice decrease in ownership. I think people are going to be real chapped at an expensive Kuchar miscut.
Yeah, I mean, that was his first miscut in 15 starts this year. I think it's interesting because he has been playing quite a bit.
Yep.
Players last week, this week. So that's a lot in hot weather for an older guy, but he is Matt Kuchar, and he is like the model of consistency, and I'm pretty sure he does this every single year.
He got the weekend off, so.
He did get the weekend off, and I think we were talking about that last week. I think sometimes that's an understated fact, and like, I really think that does help some people out. And it was almost like he wanted the weekend off, and he got the weekend off, and maybe now he's going to charge back here. I wouldn't doubt it. 93 is a nice price to see him at, especially with not that many huge names above him. So I don't hate him. I was actually going to put these three in a group: Matt Kuchar, Brooks Koepka, Adam Scott, all as three people who I'm not all that crazy about this week. And then you got Charl, who is withdrawn. So
yeah, I mean,
kind of four in a row that I'm not attached to at this point.
Not Adam Scott's course. If he does well, I'll be very surprised. I know the long putter's doing something for him, but it can only do so much. Brooks.
Yeah, I've been meaning to look up a video of him, by the way, because I hear a lot of people talking about how he's anchoring his putter, which is illegal, which is like, is he going to get... I could see him, like, everybody going, like, super chalk Adam Scott, and then he gets, like, DQ'd for the way he's playing.
I guess he would he take penalty strokes? I don't even know how that would work.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a DQ. Like, that's a firm rule, like, no anchored putters, and if it's he's cutting it that close to, like, touching his body or chin or whatever, it's interesting.
You figure they would probably, like, say to him before a tournament, like, hey, if you do that, we're going to DQ you. And I don't,
like, maybe they gave him a warning on Sunday.
He's been around long enough, but yeah, I'm not interested in Scott. Brooks, him doing well at the Players surprised me. So I've got a little bit of interest in Brooks. Obviously, you know, he's a big hitter, and this is not the course where that is key, but you know, I feel like people still haven't come around on Brooks despite what he did at the Players, and it might be a good opportunity to get in, you know, at a good price.
Yeah, I mean, the Players, you can't be hitting the ball just anywhere at the Players. And he was kind of quietly sneaking by and then had that ridiculous Sunday with the albatross followed by the birdie. And you take those away and like maybe he doesn't pique people's interest quite as much, but like he's definitely playing good again and he's definitely there, but I'm not ready to go putting like strong money on him. I think he could be like a very interesting GPP play this week. He could do what Rahm did last year and be bombing it over the dog legs and saying screw it and getting up and down for birdie. Like some people definitely will not be doing. You won't see Webb Simpson doing that. And Brooks could do that here, and he might just feel like he should be playing that way, especially if he's coming off that high of the Players. And it's tempting. He's trending in the right direction. Adam Scott is also trending in the right direction. But with this field, with these prices, I'm more of a fade on both of them, too.
All right, then jumping into the eights. First guy we got to talk about, Emiliano Grillo. He is going to be your chalky chalk play of the week. Cash games, sure, that's fine. He's a very good price. Does everything well that you need at this course. I just don't know in a GPP if he's a guy. You know, I'm struggling with it a little bit because last week I got kind of snake bit with fading chalk. So I wouldn't go full fade on him, but I think I'm not going to own him. You know, if I build 10 lineups, probably two of them have a Grillo share.
Yeah. So I think people are actually starting to really like Jason Duffner again, which is interesting. Because he's kind of one of those guys that is also trending upwards. He's coming off a miscut, T42nd, T5 at the Players. But I'm not that interested in him here. I think if I'm taking three guys in this 85-plus range, it's going to be number one. Depending on ownership, my top two are going to be Grillo and Patrick Cantlay. Sorry, Bryson DeChambeau. All three of them. I like all three of them. I'll just say it. Bryson DeChambeau and Grillo they're standing out like amazingly here. And Cantlay is someone who I always like. I took some time away and I think I might be ready to go back because
he's showing signs.
Some pretty good play. Yeah,
exactly. I'm split on DeChambeau. Yeah. He's got the two missed cuts, his tournament history, but like, that doesn't mean he didn't get experience on this golf course. So, you know,
it was last year at the John Deere when he got that win that I think he became a new player.
And he's obviously good on any cerebral course. That's his MO. He's higher than he's typically been. You know, used to seeing him in the low sevens before his little run here. So I don't think he's going to be that highly owned.
I mean, so he's 88 this week. He's gone since his miscut at the Valspar, or he might have withdrawn at the Valspar. Should have 76, and that was his only round. So, and that was early March. So then March 15th was the Arnold Palmer. So he's gone second, 38th, third, fourth, 37th. His pricing went 74 where he missed the cut, went down to 69. 69, 83, and that was a 238.3. Then he goes up to 8,000, comes in fourth. Then he's at 8,300, finishes 37th at the Players, where he, I don't know if it was his first time playing at the Players or wouldn't have been his first, but he really only had one off round with a 73 and finished 37th, which isn't all that bad for the players considering the field. I think his recent play has been fantastic, and all things considered, how he really plays his golf game, I think really should set up well for this course. And it's been a couple weeks now that I'm like, I'm a Bryson DeChambeau guy. It's kind of crazy.
He's been putting pretty well too, right?
He's been putting very well. Yeah, even on my Bentgrass stat here, which is interesting because it goes out 24 rounds, he's 17th in the field.
Yeah, that'll serve him well this week. And something working for both of those guys is right below them, you got Zach Johnson, 2-time winner here. So he's garnering a lot of attention. It's his kind of course. You know, he's in that same Webb Simpson, Matt Kuchar mold of accurate golfers. Any love for ZJ?
I always like ZJ, but looking at this field and looking at the stats, kind of taking tournament history a little out of what I'm thinking about so much here. Like I said, tournament history, maybe not so much. Yeah, it's tough. I like Zach Johnson, but if I had to pay up $100 for Grillo, depending on his ownership again, it would be him. But Bryson, I like more. Patrick Cantlay, I like more. Zach Johnson, I think hopefully people will like. Hopefully he'll take some of the ownership off of those other three guys that I really do like.
He's a more bankable name. Zach Johnson, he's been around longer. You recognize his name.
Yeah, he really is. And I think like below him, Oosthuizen, not going to get anything. He really hasn't done anything lately. Has had no luck at this tournament. And then you got Chesson Hadley, who is hopefully going to be taking some ownership because I know there are people out there who love this guy.
And, you know, I don't know how you feel about Kevin Kisner this week, but I've had my fill this season of rostering Kevin Kisner in a week where accuracy should serve a player well, and he just continuously wets the bed for me. So everyone play Kevin Kisner this week because I am not.
Yeah, it's the same thing for me. It really is. I'm sick of like trying with him. Ridiculously good tournament history, but you take that out of the picture and he is nowhere. These four stats, he is low.
Yeah, he's been a different golfer this season.
I'm off of him. There's no saying he'll make he won't make the cut, but I'm not.
All right, what do you got for me in the sevens?
In the sevens, things definitely start to get interesting. I guess we could probably start this discussion with Kevin Na. he didn't play here last year, but you know he's had a couple good performances at this course, and he's trending definitely in the right direction. I don't think we've heard any complaints from him, any reason he shouldn't show up this week. I think I actually saw his social media. I think he's there and he's playing. So that's a start.
You know, I think the pricing leveled out a little more this week. So you're not going to see anywhere near the level of chalk on Kevin Na. So if you're feeling it this week, knock yourself out. It's not a bad week to play him. I'm not a Kevin Na hater. I'm a chalky Kevin Na hater.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that he's still under 8,000 after finishing T6 last week, and everyone knew he was underpriced last week. Like, you got Charlie Hoffman right above him, who's a name, but I mean, Charlie Hoffman has been like consistently like middle of the, like makes the cut and finishes like nothing too impressive. He's gained strokes over the past 5 years, but at this point, Kevin Na is going in the right direction. We know what he's capable of, and he's only 7,800. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for someone just under that 8,000 range, like you could start there.
Who else you got?
The next one that piqued my interest down from there, I put Brian Harman on this list, even though I think he's going to be a fade for me. I guess I wanted to What do you think about him? He's got some very good tournament history, but he, since the beginning of this year, when everyone was super hype on Brian Harman, he's been disappointing. And like I said, I like to go to recent form once you're down below 8,000. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah, and the price is down a lot lower than where he started out the year. The only saving grace for Harman for me is his putting is usually pretty solid, which could serve him well this week.
Yeah, definitely. That could definitely help. It's funny because you still like look at his overall season, and it was just like so hot at the beginning that it seems like he's right. Should be like right there, higher price than 7,800, which you said, it's a really good price for him. Especially you look at some of the guys like literally just below him, and you're like, how is Brian Harman put into this group here? But I don't trust him. I don't trust him cash wise. He could really go either way. I think I'd be leaning towards Faith too. At 7,800, I'd much rather play Kevin Na. Even if Kevin Na is over 15% owned, which I don't think he will be in this field.
Probably not. Probably right around there.
Yeah. So jumping down, one guy I always like is Bo Hossler. He hasn't done anything crazy, so like temper your expectations with him. But someone I really do like this week is Scott Piercy.
I was into him last week. It wasn't a disaster. I guess he hit value.
It's funny, he's right next to Russell Knox, who I believe I said last week is the guy you put in your lineup, and then he does like a meh. And Chris Kirk. Chris Kirk's the other one that it's just always like, whatever.
Right. Like, I need a guy in this tier. I've played him before. Yeah, let me stick
Scott Piercy, Russell Knox, Chris Kirk. But you look at Scott Piercy and he's just statting out very well. Like, if I had to choose one of those three block guys, he's the one that is very interesting to me.
Right. I like Kirk better for cash lineups, but for GPPs, probably Piercy.
Yeah. Oh, God. See, this makes things that much more difficult for me. So he's in my short-term, short-stat model. He's struggling putting on bent grass, but you look at his strokes gained approach over the last 24 rounds. First. Strokes gained ball striking 24 rounds. First. Strokes gained par 4. Top 35. So if he can make some putts, he'll be right in there. But I think that's probably a pretty telling sign that he's got two top tens on the year, but if he's not making putts, it's gonna be tough for him. But I think a T16 last week in Texas is actually a very, very good sign for someone because those are some pretty low scores. And if you weren't making putts, you weren't making birdies, and you weren't going to finish top 20 last week. So Piercy is piquing my interest.
Okay. What about Adam Hadwin? There's a lot of talk on Hadwin this week. Obviously an accurate golfer. The thing I worry about with him is the hot weather. He's Canadian. It doesn't break 80 degrees up there until like August.
I kind of like that that different point of view there. I mean, Hadwin, just 2 weeks ago, I was super feeling, and I think a lot of people really were too. I'm indifferent with him. 7,600 is a good price for the guy. Like, quite honestly, I think I'd rather play Adam Hadwin than if ownership were not a thing. I would play Adam Hadwin over Brian Harman, Bo Hossler, Scott Piercy, Russell Knox, Chris Kirk, Ryan Palmer, Rory Sabatini, all of those guys. I would choose Adam Hadwin out of that crew. And he's had good history. Yeah, a decent course history. Finished T5 here in 2015, and then he's had a couple. He's made the cut both years since then, but just nothing crazy. I don't hate him, but if we hear he's going to be Chuck, it's going to be a no thank you for me.
Yeah, I'm feeling like he's probably pretty chalky.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough when you start getting these some pretty decent names like in this crew. Like there's some guys I'm interested in from 7,300 to this range. So mm-hmm. I would hope that that's honestly going to take some ownership off him. Maybe like put some ownership up top at like a Spieth, and people are going to have to skip this higher seven range and like start right. looking for some value. It'll be interesting to see.
Two names I'm hearing thrown around a lot. JJ Spawn and Danny Lee. Spawn had a pretty good tournament, obviously. You know, chalky JJ Spawn is scary a little bit. And then Danny Lee, he looks good in this Texas environment. He just turned in a good performance at the Players, but same thing. Like, either of these guys chalky are quite worrisome.
Yep. Yeah, no. I mean, honestly, I don't care where their ownership is. I'm not playing either one of them. I think both of them are like that. They just...
Got the denied stamp and slammed it down. Danny Lee, JJ Spawn.
Danny Lee just like pissed me off so long ago. Like, I'm talking like 2 years ago, so much that I just like, I can't do it. I can't do it, especially when I see Cam Smith, Ches Reavy, and Brant Snedeker at the same price or 100 more. You got Austin Cook, Kevin Tway at 74. Not playing Danny Lee. JJ Spawn, I think people are like way, way ahead of themselves right here. Like, he had a good week, finally. Good for him. The last good thing he's done was like last fall when a bunch of bums were out there playing.
Yeah.
I might be eating my words, whatever. I'm going to stick to it. No thank you and no thank you.
All right, anybody else in the sevens here for you?
In the sevens, I think I pretty much just named them for you. The guys that I would take a look at. Yeah. Kevin Tway, like, I was so pumped on actually choosing him from the crowd last week.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't matter because the rest of my lineups were screwed in one way or another. So I'm still on him. Pat Perez at 7,300 is like, what's going on here? But there might be some reason for that.
Yeah, fat guy in the heat. That's not a good combination.
Yeah, it's a really good point. But then again, hey, Mark Leishman almost won it last week. So
yeah, he's an Aussie. He's used to being fat in the heat.
That's true. Pat Perez is like drunk.
He was born fat in the heat.
Yeah, I think he's literally getting drunk like six or seven nights out of the week and doesn't really give a shit right now. So we'll see. Kevin Streelman, always interesting to me.
You know, Streelman doesn't play well in the heat, and I know I'm kind of obsessed with weather this week and hot weather golf coming out of last weekend because it was such a narrative I focused on. So it might have just zero correlation, but you know, it's another Texas event and Texas weather, and I'm gonna use what I learned last week this week.
Hey, I mean, we're getting into the hot part of the year. They're in Texas. I can tell you from playing golf myself that I swear to you, it's something about whenever I go out west, whenever I go to a warm weather climate, something is just off for me. I don't know if it's like I'm in a different course that I really want to play well at or what, but I like it takes me a little while to get back into the swing of things, and it's very strange. But with that said, these guys are pros, and they have practice rounds, and they've done it a million times, and Kevin Streelman is a cut-making boss. And I got to meet Larry Fitzgerald this week and see him swing a golf club multiple times. And him and Kevin Streelman won the Pro-Am at Pebble Beach. So
does Larry Legend put a little charge into the ball?
I should have asked him. Dude, I should have said, how do you feel about Kevin Streelman this week? No, he really is, dude. He's a funny guy, and he's got a great golf swing, and he's just a good golfer. funnier guy, Reggie Bush, worse golfer, also Reggie Bush.
So, I can see that. I can see that.
He's quite the character, though.
Two guys that I want to mention here as we're closing out. Ryan Armour, very accurate golfer. He came out really great last week and then just kind of parred the rest of the tournament and finished 59th. But like, if this isn't one of his best finishes of the year, a course where you just go out and par everything and that's good enough for top 25, like, I don't know when else we're going to have use for Ryan Armour.
Yeah, you know, he's always interesting because you see what he's done, what he's capable of. We all know he's a pretty good golfer. And I know you like him and you bring him up sometimes. And I cannot fault you for that at all. And I think mixed in there with these names down here, I think it's like a total possibility. I don't hate him. I don't hate him. I probably won't be playing him. I think there are, once I do a little more digging, I think I'll have a better idea. But I guess I'll just highlight a few guys I do like down here for the interest of saving time here. Number one, Sean O'Hare is like always kind of like a stat guy for me. He withdrew with the Players. I'm not sure what that was all about. Do you happen to know?
I don't. It just says undisclosed.
All right. Well, look into that. If it was a legitimate reason, whatever, form your opinion off that. He's always statting out pretty well.
He's a good GPP play.
Yeah. Especially if there's like, if it was an injury or something, then stay away. But I am yet to look into that. Sam Saunders, I don't ever play him because he's scary, but like, he finished sixth last week and he's played this course and he finished T24 last week for 7,100. That's not too bad. Corey Connors, another guy I'm like always a little bit interested in. He's had quite the year, 7,000. It's an option. I actually missed here two guys at 7,200. Could you guess who I'm going to talk about? I know you like one of them.
72. Burnsy?
Yeah, Sam Burns, and then Sharma, too.
Sharma.
Sharma, you think about where he succeeded in Mexico, and that was like a very, very tight tree-lined course. This is pretty much a tree-lined course. Like, you got to be accurate and make some putts. Like, and I think people are finally not talking about him because every other tournament he's played in since that round, since that tournament, people have been like, oh, I'm going to play Sharma, 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 Sharma this, Sharma that. Who knows?
He can handle the heat. That's for sure.
Yes, he can. Exactly. So Burns and Sharma, don't count him out here. Any lower than that, I think Sam Saunders was actually where I ended my list at. Anyone else for you?
So I like Bill Haas for all the reasons I liked him last week. If he misses the cut for a fourth straight week, like, he's going to have to figure out if he needs to take an extended break or what. I don't know what's going on. Obviously,
he was
the car
right
accident.
There. It was one stroke. He was -3. He was sitting there in the clubhouse waiting to make the cut in his defense. So,
he could have come out and had two good rounds. So,
wasn't a nasty miscut.
Right. Like, I went overboard on Bill Haas last week. I thought it was going to be his turnaround. So, I got to play a little bit of him this week in case I was just off by 1 week. That's all I got down there.
Yeah, you're getting a good price for him, so I don't hate that.
All right, let's hit some ownership really quick here. Spieth, most talked about golfer, obviously. Grillo right on his heelos.
Grillo right on his heelos.
obviously the price tag with Grillo is going to drive ownership. Webb Simpson, Zach Johnson, not far off. I think we covered those guys. Hadwin, Rahm, both getting plenty of talk. Danny Lee, that's a really high spot for a golfer who's caused so many headaches.
Yeah, no thanks.
Jimmy Walker is on the front page of the tags, but I think his ownership is going to be fine in this field.
Love it.
Ricky, Brooks, Bryson, they're being talked about, but not to the extent that I think they should. So their ownerships are probably a slight value. Kuchar, nowhere
coming
near.
Coming off a missed cut.
Yeah, and even some of his tags are in the negative connotation. Play Kuchar in tournaments.
Make sure he's there first, though.
Yeah.
Make sure he shows up.
Yeah. Trying to look at any other names that are big names but not getting mentioned. Harmon, not much mention.
Very interesting play.
Yeah. That about does it for ownership. So let's hit some one and dones here. For me, the first guy I'd be looking at is Jimmy Walker. This is your window for using Jimmy Walker in a one and done. Texas is feeling good. I think he finally brings one home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't hate that at all. He's trending. He's definitely trending. I think considering this tournament, a reason I like Jimmy Walker here is most people will be looking to save if they haven't already used a Jordan Spieth, a John Rahm, a Justin Rose, a Ricky Fowler.
And a bit weaker field.
Right. So with that said, I think I would go with one and done wise, doesn't matter, ownership, whatever. It's like if you're trying to be different from the field, I would go Bryson DeChambeau. If you're not trying to be different from the field at all, Emiliano.
Right.
Those are two of like the mid-range, not stud players that are up there other than Jimmy Walker that I really, really like right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, outside of Walker, there's not too many names I would love in a one and done situation. I mean, maybe Zach Johnson if you haven't used him, just with the history, but
people are really hot on Chess and Hadley. That could be another interesting one. Patrick Cantlay I like too. So
yeah,
those are like four guys that are definitely in play this week, and I wouldn't doubt to see them finishing in the top 20.
All right, so that does it for this week's Sweet Spot, guys. Get after us in the Slack chat. Get to the all-in tier on patreon.com/lineuplogic. Follow me and Alex on Twitter. I'm at @Roto_Juan. Alex is at Donald Remington. Hit us with questions in there on Slack. Make sure you add us. I'm worthless without the at. Your question will wither away in the room.
Sir, PGA is still alive.
Yep. So we'll be in there. We'll be checking lineups, post them, hit us with questions, and good luck, guys.
Good luck. See you next week.